There's such a thing as Lloyd's, remember? With their records of ships. Aye, and the folk who sailed on them. So be prepared.
With this strange speech, leaving the room, the house, and my father in a state of distress, it grieved me to see...
Victor, this Mr. Beddoes, what can you tell me about him?
Why, simply that he and Dad made their fortunes together in Australia, and then both returned to the old country, where they maintain a close friendship, though Beddoes lives in Fordingbridge, Hampshire. He's very much a hunting type, sends Dad an invitation every autumn to shoot over his preserves. But really, I've seen Beddoes only once or twice in my life. However, it's a letter from Fordingbridge that's finally... Oh, Holmes!
Victor, what has happened? What letter?
Ah, Dad. Here you are. That article about the new game laws. I heard the doorbell. Someone from the estate?
No. Special delivery from Fordingbridge.
Mr. Beddoes?
Open it, my boy, would you? Well, is it from...
I've no idea who it's from, Dad. For it makes no sense. The supply of game for London is going... although there is mention in it of that villain Hudson.
Let me see. Headkeeper Hudson. Fly paper. Oh, Lord!
Dad? Dad! May! Dad, what's happening? Oh, my God. May! Here, on the couch, Dad.
Yes, sir. Oh, poor Mr. Trevor.
The doctor, May. The doctor, as soon as possible. My father has had a stroke. We put him to bed, but the paralysis has set in, and I do not think he'll... Well, there was one thing, though.
Yes?
Dad was half conscious during the initial stages when I sent for the doctor. Which word, doctor, seemed to excite him greatly. Began waving his arms about, started to struggle.
How very strange. How very, very strange. But the letter, Victor, that caused so dreadful a result, what was in it?
Well, as I said, nothing. It's absurd, trivial, unless I've misread it.
Either that, my dear fellow. Ah, the chimneys of the house.
Yes, just round this bend and we're... Ah, look, the blinds are drawn. We're too late, Holmes. Too late.
We reached the house to be informed that old Justice Trevor had died soon after Victor had left for the station to collect me.
And no clue as to what it was all about. What had sparked the apoplectic attack?
Now, the old man's last and only words, according to the doctor, were a message for Victor to the effect that the papers were in the Japanese cabinet.
Papers?
Well, in those circumstances, Watson, I did not want to start questioning Victor about papers or indeed anything else. I simply left him to ascend to the chamber of death while I remained in the study, turning the whole matter over and over and over in my head and feeling as somber as I ever had in my life.
My dear Victor, how can I...
No, Holmes, old fellow, I beg you. All I require is that you discover what is in this accursed, nonsensical letter. Here. Ah, May, the lamp on the table, would you, for Mr. Holmes? And then you will be needed, I feel, upstairs.
Oh, sir. The master. Such a kind man. A good man. Oh, sir.
On you go, May.
So, written on one side of a single sheet of grey paper and reading, the supply of game for London is going steadily up. Headkeeper Hudson, we believe, has been now told to receive all orders for fly paper and for the preservation of your... hen pheasant's life.
You see, Holmes, nonsense, as I told you.
So it seems at first sight, but I wonder if there's some second meaning buried in this strange combination of words, perhaps a prearranged significance of such phrases as flypaper and hen pheasant. Yes, yet this would be arbitrary and could not be deduced in any way, and I'm loath to believe that's the case. And the presence of the word Hudson, well, surely he must be the subject, yes, which means, therefore, Beddoes must be the sender. Now, if it's code... So, backwards, life, pheasants, hen. Alternate words? No. Reverse alternate? No. Wait. Oh, wait. What if we... And at that moment, Watson... As I looked, the key to the whole riddle was suddenly in my hands.
As it is in mine, Holmes. for you must know I too have done it.
Indeed?
Indeed. Like yourself, I decided the message was about or from Hudson, and so decided to disregard the whole of the first half, up to headkeeper Hudson. Hmm? Then, what struck me was the amount of hyphenated words in the remainder, which I considered to be quite suspicious. You follow me, old chap?
Oh, avidly,
oh, good, avidly, good, yes. Good. So, if we take out the words headkeeper, flypaper, hen pheasant, and also remove the unnatural and tautological and for, why, we are then left with Hudson, we believe, Leave has been told to receive all orders for the preservation of your life. Which, I assume, was what Hudson was persuaded into by Beddoes when he reached Hampshire.
But that would hardly bring on a fatal attack, being told a man who you fear is now going to protect you.
Ah.
And which reading must also be erroneous for an even more mundane reason.
Which is...
Hen pheasant does not contain a hyphen.
Ah. Let me check. Why, bless my soul, I could have sworn. I mean, when you think of hen pheasant, well, that is, I always think of hen pheasant, though, of course.
No, Doctor, a good and worthy try. And indeed, given more time, but time is one thing you do not have now, nor I had then. So, if you'll allow me, I will tell you that the answer to the riddle is that every third word is used, mm-hmm. beginning with the first word of the message. Now, you try it.
The game is up. Hudson has told all fly for your life. Well, I'll be damned.
Well, Victor felt he was. For no sooner had I deciphered the letter than he buried his head in his hands and prognosticated disgrace staring him in the face, as well as having to bear his father's death.
Disgrace? But from where?
Here, Watson. These papers that Trevor Senior wrote when he knew the threat of exposure was upon him. The history of a convicted criminal.
Hudson, I suppose.
Justice Trevor, Watson.
What?
For as a young man, as one James Armitage...
Why, J.A.? The initials you saw on his arm.
Indeed. Trevor was convicted of fraud and sentenced to be transported to Australia.
My God. No wonder he suffered a stroke when he thought exposure was upon him. Respected member of the community, justice of the peace.
Yes, indeed. For not only was it that he'd escaped his banishment and returned to England, but there were even darker crimes involved, all of which are set down in these papers and take place, for the most part... aboard the bark, Gloria Scott, on which, in the year 1855, James Armitage, together with another 38 jailbirds and assorted crew and soldiers, found himself about to sail for Australia. But on a vessel that, in many ways, was not quite what it appeared to be.
Jump live for there!
Anchor up on a peak, sir!
Anchor up it is! Lay by the capstan bars, you men! Coil away the cable. Parson, a bit more about the wheel, would you?
Oh, of course, Captain. I am not in your way, I...
Not where you are, though why you want to experience a ship going to sea, and especially this ship...
Love of knowledge, Captain. And one never knows. But there is something wrong with this particular vessel?
This damn war, that's what's wrong with it, Parson. Ready with the topsails there.
Topsails ready to hoist away, sir.
The war in the Crimea.
Let fall the sheet home. Race up sharp forward. Aye. All the old convict ships have all gone as supply transports to the Black Sea. And we've been given these worn-out hulks from the China Run in their place. Broad as dockyard moles.
Then are we not safe? Is there danger?
Helmsman, give her a little port to get her around the point. You hear, man? Port a little.
Aye, aye, sir. Port it is.
Mr. Mate, ease off the sheets and lee braces to windward.
Aye, aye, sir.
Now then, Parson, safe? Aye, well, only because those rogues in the hold have neither the strength nor wit to take advantage. The partitions between the cells are as thin as a wind off the horn, and more weevils in the wood than any purser's biscuit. Now, steady as she goes, helmsman. Steady away.
Aye, aye, sir, steady as she goes.
Strange, though, to find a man of the cloth interested in these matters, Reverend Wilson. Not one of those reformers, are you? Come to spy on us?
Reformer, Captain? Oh, hardly that, sir, I assure you. No, hardly a reformer at all.
And nor was he. For what he really was Jack Prendergast's sometime partner and right-hand man.
Prendergast? I don't think
that... Long before our time, Watson.
A notorious and vicious criminal of his age who had stolen $250,000, none of which was recovered, but part of which was utilized by this Reverend Wilson to bribe almost all of the crew of the Gloria Scott.
Good God.
Wilson having come aboard with the right clothes, a set of forged documents, and a box full of money for this purpose, which he used to such effect that in the end it was only the captain, two of the mates, two warders, the doctor and the soldiers that were not in the pay of the mutineers. So, on the surface, they were secure. However...
They suffered a setback.
One of the convicts below became ill and sent for the doctor.
Sick, you say, Parson? Sick?
Indeed, Doctor. A cough, some sweating, cramps.
And that's sick, is it, Parson? Well, sir, for your information, I see no sick men here. I see lazy men, cunning men, malingering men, but no man I would call sick. But I have seen sick men, sir, on the old Hector. Aye, and operated in the cockpit on a table where the stains of the port were indistinguishable from those of the blood.
Oh, really?
Where alongside that same table I've kept buckets of sawdust into which I have thrown hands, feet, limbs, yards of entrails, while the men to whom they belonged lay in the tears, leading their lives away for the country. And they, sir, were sick men.
Dear me.
And now, which is the idle rogue you wish me to see?
In here, Doctor.
This man. Well?
It's ague, I think, sir. Perhaps if you examine...
How dare you, sir, attempt to tell the surgeon his business? There is only one thing I wish to examine here. Your feet. They will tell me more than... Oh, what? What?
Well, Doctor, a condition you have not come across before?
Indeed. I think I must go to...
Here, let us investigate. Well, well. A strange condition indeed. A loaded pistol. But you'll be used to those from the old Hector, no doubt. Stay where you are, Doctor. Here, you. Free Mr. Prendergast first, then the others. Prendergast!
Aye!
The captain's cabin first, right?
Aye! The great cabin! And kill anything that gets in our way. From there, we'll secure the ship. Quickly now! Quickly! Quietly there! Wilson, what do you think? Is he in there?
Aye, Jack. But with the door locked, he's heard the shooting.
Clear away. Clear away and leave this to me.
Captain? Captain! It is the Reverend Wilson. The convicts are loose. There's a mutiny. Open up and we will stand together. I have a brace of pistols here. We will hold them off until the soldiers come. Oh, hurry, Captain, hurry! They will be on us any minute. Hurry, man! Two are better than one.
Reverend, thank heaven. Here, let me take one of those.
Aye.
Here, Captain. This one.
God.
Aye, lads, well done. Now then, Armitage. Step lively, man. This is no Mrs. Boarding School. Huh? Broach that locker there. Deeds like ours deserve a just reward, eh, Chaplain?
Oh, indeed, my son. Though remember, we are told that wine is a mocker, strong drink is raging. Still, a little rage never did anybody any harm.
Except the captain.
Oh, never mind that, mates. Here, let me.
Oh, stow a clapper on your drawing tackle, Parson.
Never mind, Parson. There's many here have their running gear choked enough we'd not ship you.
Why? Dozen brown sherry. Here, lads, crack the necks of these.
Prendergast, we should get on. There is the militia.
Still tucked up forward, Armitage. We'll finish here and then we'll see.
The skylight. What? The skylight, look out! Oh, God! Oh, God!
Stop!
Oh, God!
Stop!
On the hands! Only just make for the deck and take them! Follow me!
And follow Prendergast they did. And Prendergast somehow turned the day for them, fighting like a raging devil, picking up soldiers and throwing them overboard as if they'd been children, shooting those who tried to swim. Until at last there were left only the remnants of the crew who surrendered, couple of warders, the doctor, and the chief mate.
Poor devils. What happened to them?
Well, Prendergast argued that the job must be finished, that there should be no tongue ever left to wag in a witness box. And most of the mutineers agreed, though some, including Armitage and Evans, did not wish to see murder done in cold blood, sentiments which brought them within an ace of being shot. At the last moment, however, Prendergast relented and gave them a boat, provisions, a chart, and set them adrift for the nearest land 700 miles to the east and 600 to the north, and the instruction that if they were picked up, they were to say they were shipwrecked mariners. Yes, and it was from that boat, Watson, that the events occurred which caused the letter in your hand to be written and old Justice Trevor to be frightened to death.
Here, Evans, you take the chart. You've done some sailing, I believe.
Aye, but in former and happier times, Armitage. And not with Africa a lifetime to the east and Cape de Verde the same distance to the north. Hey, look, the bark, the Glorious Scott. She's begun to make way. Should we have stayed, I wonder?
I don't think so, Evans. All that blood. The soldiers were one thing, but those others completely defenceless. My God, Evans!
That was the ship! It's vanished!
The arsenal has gone up. Can be nothing else. We may though save some.
Yeah.
Some may have escaped. You men, lay to your oars. The poor men pulled for pity's sake. Armitage, you take the bow.
Right.
Look for any sign of life among the wreckage.
Yes, right. Make way there, men.
Anything?
Oh, bars, casks, done it. No, nothing. Pull, men. Oh, wait, though. Over there. Line across that crate. Now, row, row now, men, as if your life depended on it. Row, row. Right, right, steady up. And ease her. Now, port oars now. Come, bring her around. Right, here, help me lift him aboard. Easy.
You recognize him, Armitage?
It's young Hudson. Hudson! Hudson! What happened? What happened to the ship?
The remnants of the crew had been put to death by the mutineers, Prendergast himself apparently cutting the doctor's throat. And hence, perhaps, the dying Trevor's stricken reference to a doctor. whatever. The chief mate was the last, but he, somehow, broke loose and sought refuge in the afterhold. The mutineers followed him in to find him, calmly sitting, holding a box of matches over an open powder barrel and surrounded by another 99 similar barrels.
Good God. He touched them off?
Either that or a stray shot. All Hudson saw was a blinding light. And the next thing he knew, he was being lifted into the boat.
Gently, Evans, gently. The lad's exhausted.
Oh, you'll look after me now, Mr. Armitage, won't you? Won't you?
The next day, they were picked up by the brig Hotspur, who believed completely they were survivors of a passenger ship that had foundered. Whiskey, Doctor?
Yes, thank you.
Right. They were landed at Sydney, where Armitage and Evans changed their names to Trevor and Beddoes, and then went on to become prosperous and powerful men who only in their lives made one more mistake.
They came back to England.
Yes, exactly. Hudson tracked them down somehow and decided to live off their fears, first going to Trevor and then to Beddoes. And, of course, it was Beddoes' note to Trevor that Hudson was prepared to tell all that initiated a fatal seizure here.
Much needed. I've never heard such a bloodthirsty tale.
No.
But did Hudson tell everything? What eventually happened?
Nothing. And neither Beddoes nor the sailor were ever heard of again. Nor was any complaint from either party ever lodged with the police. Of course, inquiries were made, Beddoes being a man of substance in the neighbourhood. But Hudson had been seen lurking about, and it was simply believed he'd done away with Beddoes and fled.
Mm. But you don't think so?
No, quite the opposite. I believe Beddoes, a keen shot and a sportsman, took care of Hudson and then left the country, probably for Australia again. After his first adventure, I have a feeling someone like Beddoes would have made adequate provision for protecting himself should any further unfortunate circumstances arise which might threaten his peace of mind and liberty.
What A truly incredible tale. Transportation, mutiny, murder, powder kegs, fortunes, aliases, blackmail. I can hardly believe it.
Yes, well, Victor could. And it broke his heart. His beloved father. In fact, it affected him so much, he ended up by going to Terai, the tea planter. Well, I hear he's doing well.
And that was your first case. No wonder so little has seemed to surprise you in any of the succeeding problems you've faced. What a web of confusion and deceit. And you so young.
And here, my friend, are the papers, should you want them for your collection.
Oh, indeed I do, Holmes.
Yes, there we are. Yes, well, you seem a bit more cheerful now.
Yes. Strangely, I am, Holmes. You know, it's a sad reflection on humanity, is it not? That a man be cheered by a recital of such a catalogue of horrendous events. But, well, it has somehow banished the gloom which overtook me earlier. I wonder why that is.
Was it not Seneca who observed that being human, nothing else human, was alien to him?
Holmes. Terence, I believe.
Ah. Even so, the tale was interesting, Doctor. And its interest, surely, that is the very key to life.
In The Gloria Scott, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Merrison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Simon Treves as Victor Trevor. Old Justice Trevor was played by Terence Edmund, Trevor as a young man by Nigel Carrington, Hudson by Eric Allen, the Captain by Charles Millam, Reverend Wilson by Mark Straker, Prendergast by Alan Barker, the Doctor by Fraser Carr, and the Maid by Cyril Jenkins. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Gloria Scott was dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney and directed by Patrick Rayner.
Where have you been? Listen to this. Patience, tell your father.
What's the matter, girl? What you been doing?
I was down at the pool.
So?
Oh, Mr. McCarthy was there.
I told you to keep away from that man.
Mr. James was there too. They was fighting.
What do you mean fighting?
She means fighting. What's the matter with you? They were shouting at each other and saying horrible things.
What of it? Let him.
Mr. James had a gun.
Are you sure?
Yes, I ran all the way back here.
Scared out of her mind she was. Go down there, Arthur. See everything's all right.
Oh, don't be stupid, woman. I'm not wasting my time with McCarthy and his son. Besides, there's no point.
What? Oh! Mr. James! What's happened, sir?
It's my father. Down by the pool. He's dead.
The Boscombe Valley Mystery by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Bert Cools. With Clive Merrison as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring John Woodvine as John Turner and Danielle Allen as his daughter Alice. The Boscombe Valley Mystery.
It was in the second year of my marriage that I became aware of the tragic events in the Boscombe Valley in Herefordshire. At that time, my private practice had become a busy one. And there were some days on which I scarcely had time for anything outside my consulting room and my daily round. The strains of such an existence had not escaped the attention of Mary, my wife, whose habit of drawing conclusions from small details was sometimes disconcertingly familiar.
Well, John, what does Mr. Holmes have to say?
Now, how on earth did you know that this was from Holmes?
A telegram from a patient would have had you rushing from the room at once. and there's a distinctly nostalgic look in your eyes. Shall you go?
Good Lord, you're doing it again.
Oh, John, stop it. You're sounding like one of your own stories. Why else would he wire if he didn't want you to rush off somewhere on an investigation?
Have you a couple of days to spare? Have been sent for from the west of England. She'll be glad if you will come with me. Air and scenery perfect. I leave Paddington by the 11:15.
Well, Dr. Anstruther will stand in for you. He owes you a favour. And you've been very pale lately. You certainly could do with a change.
Thank you, Doctor.
Or have you suddenly lost interest in Mr. Holmes and his cases?
Now, that would be most ungrateful, seeing what I gain through one of them.
Thank you, Doctor. So?
I'll go and pack. I only have half an hour.
It's really very good of you to come, Watson.
Good of you to ask me, Holmes.
It makes a considerable difference to me having someone I can thoroughly rely on. Local aid is either worthless or biased.
Thank you. So, what's the case?
The Boscombe Valley Tragedy, they're calling it.
Good title.
Wait until I've solved it before you think about putting pen to paper. There's a good chap.
Well?
Well, it seems to be one of those simple cases which are so extremely difficult.
That sounds a little paradoxical.
But it's profoundly true. Singularity is almost invariably a clue. The more featureless and commonplace a crime is, the more difficult it is to bring it home.
So there are no leads?
On the contrary. They've established a very serious case against the son of the murdered man.
It's a murder, then?
Yes, Watson. It's a murder.
James, I've only just heard...
Miss Turner, you shouldn't be here.
Oh, don't be foolish, Moran. James, speak to me.
Alice? No.
Best keep away from him, miss.
What on earth do you mean? James, you must pull yourself together before the police arrive. Come on, turn round and look at me. Oh!
Covered in blood?
Yeah. You're right. It does look bad for him. There's more. McCarthy Sr. was beaten to death with a heavy, blunt object. The son's shotgun was found lying beside the body.
I can hardly imagine a more damning case.
Circumstantial evidence can be very tricky. If you shift your point of view a little, you often find it pointing in an equally uncompromising manner to something completely different.
Even so, the whole thing seems to me to be practically hopeless. How did you get involved?
There are several people in the neighbourhood who believe in his innocence. Among them, Miss Alice Turner.
Ah.
Please, Doctor, it's a little early to cast her in the role of romantic heroine.
But it was she who sent for you.
Indirectly, yes. The Strayed's in charge down there, and Miss Turner...
The Strayed? But surely it's a purely local affair.
Well, evidently, there aren't enough metropolitan murders to keep the Scotland Yarders awake. Anyway, Miss Turner insisted on his contacting me.
Insisted, eh? I imagine he loved that.
And hence it is that we're flying westward at 50 miles an hour instead of quietly digesting our breakfasts at home. I wish the summons had arrived earlier. It would have been useful to have attended the coroner's inquest.
I've been away in Bristol for a few days on business. When I returned on Monday morning, my father wasn't at home. I took my gun and strolled out in the direction of Boscombe Pool. There's a rabbit warren there.
Just a moment. You come home after a business trip and your first impulse is to go out and shoot rabbits?
I wanted to let off some steam. I was angry.
You were angry? Your business had not gone well?
No, sir, not well at all.
Continue.
When I was still in the trees, about 100 yards from the pool, I heard my father calling to me.
He called you by name?
No, sir, he called Cooey. That was a private signal between us.
So he was expecting you?
No, he couldn't have been. He didn't know when I was coming back from Bristol. Our meeting was an accident.
An accident? You're quite sure that you didn't follow your father to this secluded spot quite deliberately?
No!
The child, Patience Moran, has testified that you and your father engaged in a violent quarrel. What was the subject of this violent quarrel?
I can't answer that question.
Young man, you must be aware that this refusal will prejudice your case considerably. Perhaps you will condescend to answer this. Was this quarrel with your father an isolated incident, or had there been others?
An isolated incident? No, sir, we were always fighting.
What was the outcome of this final fight?
There was no outcome. I could see that my father was in no state to listen to reason, so I turned and walked away from him. I hadn't gone many yards into the trees when I heard... when I heard him.
Father!
Oh, my God! What? I can't hear you.
A rat.
What did you say?
A rat.
You seriously expect this court to believe that in his last extremity your father spoke of a rat?
It's the truth, I swear it.
When you returned to the clearing, did you see anything suspicious?
Well...
Come along, it's a simple enough question. Did you see anything suspicious?
I think so.
You think so?
Just out of the corner of my eye, something... something moving away into the trees.
Would you please be a little more specific?
Something large and grey. It was crawling over the ground.
Mr. Holmes.
Inspector Lestrade, you remember Dr. Watson?
I certainly do. Doctor?
Inspector? Yeah. I see you're blending into the country setting, Lestrade. Mm-hmm. Ooh, those leather leggings are extremely fetching.
Now, you know perfectly well that these country people are in awe of Scotland Yard. It does no harm to try to look like one of them.
Quite right, my dear fellow. It does no harm to try. Now, are we going to conduct the entire case from this charming railway station, or are you going to show us the way to our hotel?
Here, Father, drink this. Here. Oh, no, don't spill it.
Oh, for pity's sake, Alice. Don't treat me like a child. I can still hold a glass.
I'm sorry.
No, girl. I shouldn't snap at you. Here. Give me the stuff. It's a close thing. Which one will get me first? The illness or the cure?
Oh, Father, you mustn't talk that way. Have you been smoking again? Oh, you know what Dr. Willow said.
I don't want to hear that man's name.
You see? Now lie back and relax.
Oh, how can I relax? I should have been at that trial.
It was an inquest, not a trial. Now, you get some rest. I'm going out for a while.
Are you going to visit that boy? I've told you to keep away from him.
A rat! A rat!
Bravo, Lestrade. A most gripping recreation. Illuminating.
Illuminating? Everyone from the coroner downwards thought young McCarthy was coming out with a pack of lies.
You're convinced he's guilty.
Well, aren't you? The whole thing is as plain as a pikestaff. You're wasting your time, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, splendid, this country air. Tell me about Miss Alice Turner.
Well, she's barely turned 18 and damnably attractive.
Yes, yes, I trust you've discovered more about her than that.
I've not heard a bad word against her. She's certainly well-liked by the tenants on her father's estate. And by all accounts, she's inherited his generosity and fairness.
The McCarthys, were they landowners or tenants?
Tenants of the Turners.
What's Miss Turner's relationship with young McCarthy?
Close, if you ask me. A sign of bad judgment on her part. But she's a strong-willed young lady and knows her own mind.
Mr. Holmes, James didn't do it. I know it, and I want you to start your work knowing it too.
I hope we may clear him, Miss Turner.
You may rely on our doing everything we can.
Do you think that he is innocent?
I think it very probable.
There now, Inspector, you hear? I keep telling you, James wouldn't hurt a fly.
We were always fighting. His own words. They were fighting only minutes before the father was killed.
Yes, but...
Miss Turner, I believe you know what that fight was about.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I do.
Have you been withholding evidence?
Please, Lestrade. Miss Turner?
It was about me.
About you?
I'm sure that that's why James wouldn't explain it. Mr. McCarthy was very anxious that his son and I should marry. Lately, he seemed to talk about little else.
Ah.
We have always loved each other, as brother and sister, I mean. But, well, James is young and has seen very little of life. Naturally, he didn't want to marry yet.
And your father? Was he in favour of this union?
No, he was not.
Ah, thank you for this information. May I see your father if I call tomorrow?
I'm afraid the doctor won't allow it.
The doctor?
Mr. Turner wasn't in the best of health, gentlemen, and this affair has broken him down completely. No one's allowed to disturb him.
Dr. Willow says that his nervous system is shattered. I must go now. I don't like to leave him for too long. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Miss?
Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Miss Turner?
When you see James at the prison, do tell him that I know he is innocent.
I will do so.
Then goodbye. And God help you in your undertaking.
I've told you everything that happened. How many more times?
We are not interested in your fairy tales, my lad. What we want is the truth.
Who killed your father, Mr. McCarthy?
What?
Who killed your father? Give us the name of the person you're shielding, and you'll be out of this jail in minutes.
You're mad. Listen, we had our differences, but he was my father, for God's sake. Do you really think that if I knew who killed him, I'd be keeping it a secret? What sort of son do you take me for?
Thank you. It's always gratifying to have a theory confirmed.
This is ridiculous. Men have been hanged on less evidence than I've got against this prisoner.
And many men have been wrongly hanged.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Sherlock Holmes. Now tell me, McCarthy, how long have you been married?
Dr. Watson?
Yes, I'm Watson.
Begging your pardon, Doctor.
What is it? What can I do for you?
I'm Arthur Moran, sir. A lodgekeeper up at the Hall. Miss Turner asked me to give you this.
Why don't you send for the local doctor?
Dr. Will is not here, sir. He's gone out to Reese Farm to see old Mr. Logan. It's nigh on 15 miles. This is very urgent, Doctor.
Of course. I'll come at once.
I was stupid, I know it. It happened 3 years ago. Alice had been away for more than 5 years at boarding school. I didn't know she was ever coming back. But Father was already going on and on about her.
So, purely as an act of defiance, you married someone else?
She's a barmaid.
A barmaid?
And she now lives in Bristol.
How do you know all this? Has she been talking?
No, she's been doing something far more eloquent. Your wrists and cheeks bear recently healed parallel scratches, the unmistakable signs of attack from an hysterical woman. Couple that with your marked reluctance to marry Miss Turner, despite the obvious bond between you, and the conclusion is a simple one. I take it that your business trip was to try to free yourself.
Yes. She told me to go to hell.
Charming. And even though the whole point was to spite your father, you lost your nerve and didn't tell him.
He'd have killed... He would have been very angry. Probably thrown me out. How would I have lived?
Did anyone else know of this marriage?
No one. And please, you mustn't tell Alice. I wouldn't hurt her for the world. Please.
It will be a moment or two before it takes effect. Try to breathe slowly and evenly.
It was so good of you to come, Dr. Watson.
Oh, not a bit. I've done what I can with what Dr. Willow's left here, but you must send for him as soon as he returns.
I told you, Alice. No doctors.
Oh, Father. I'm so sorry.
No, that's perfectly all right, Miss Turner. Now, please don't excite yourself, sir. Give me your wrist. Try to relax.
That's all I ever hear.
Here you are, Doctor.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful to you for coming out. I didn't know who else to turn to.
No, you did the right thing, Miss Turner. Has he had these sudden relapses before?
Yes. He's been seriously ill for years, but it's been much worse since the tragedy. Dr. Willows does what he can, but... Well, Dad isn't exactly a willing patient. He used to be such an active man. I wish you could have known him when he was younger. So full of life, and...
It can't have been easy for you.
I just do what has to be done.
I think you're very like him. A fighter. The crisis of this attack is over. He should be stronger tomorrow.
Thank God.
Miss Turner, would you object to talking about...
The murder? Mm. No, certainly not. Oh, I was so pleased that you and Mr. Holmes consented to come. This must seem such a petty little affair to him.
Oh, no. If he thought that, he never would have accepted the case.
That policeman, Inspector Lestrade, he seems so certain that James is guilty.
I have known Mr. Lestrade to be wrong before now. Mr. McCarthy was a tenant of your father's, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
What was he like? Was he a good farmer?
The land was well worked.
And what sort of man was he?
He was hard to know.
Popular, would you say?
I think you must ask them in the village. I saw little of him.
Very well. Is your father's estate a large one?
Very large.
Holmes will probably want to speak to the estate manager.
He has already done so.
I'm sorry?
Dr. Watson, my father wouldn't trust an outsider to look after his lands and his tenants. I have been managing Boscombe for the last 2 years, since I was 16.
You are a remarkable young woman, Miss Turner.
Thank you, sir.
And I think that you care very deeply for James McCarthy.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Excellent. You can't beat good country cooking. Tell me more about this McCarthy lad.
I think he's sound at heart, though not exactly quick-witted. He's comely to look at.
But to rush into marriage like that? Well, at least it explains his lack of interest in Miss Turner.
I found that astonishing. The voice of the connoisseur, Watson?
Really, Holmes?
What else did you glean from your visit to the hall? And that really was a stroke of luck.
Your client's father is dying. He has a history of diabetes, and this recent business has led to complications.
Yes, yes. Did you learn anything about the family's relationship with the murdered man?
Miss Turner showed a marked reluctance to speak about McCarthy. I think she disliked him, possibly intensely.
Indeed, even though he was in favour of the marriage and her own father was not?
Yeah. Despite that one difference of opinion, the two men were old friends, apparently. Did you know that Turner let McCarthy have Hatherley Farm rent-free?
No, I didn't. Fascinating. Philanthropic towards the father, dislikes the son. Curious. Tell me about the house.
It's well appointed, of course. There's a lot of money in the family. Mr. Turner made his fortune out in Australia, the height of the mining boom. Place is full of Australian pictures, souvenirs, that sort of thing. Made me feel quite nostalgic. I only spent a couple of years there when I was a boy. God knows it was a lawless sort of place back then, but it's the sort of land that
gets into your bones, so to speak. Holmes, are you listening?
Watson!
Good morning.
And a beautiful one, too. Been for a walk?
Yes. To speak to that fount of all village knowledge, the postmaster.
And? Assuming your diagnosis to be correct, Miss Turner was not an isolated case. In fact, Bill McCarthy seems to have been liked by no one. On the day before he was killed, he very nearly came to blows with someone in public.
Did he, by God? Who was this someone?
He was scum.
Arthur. He was the master's friend.
And don't you go on about speaking ill of the dead, neither. He deserved what he got.
Just why did you hate him so much?
Look, Inspector, I've been Mr. Turner's lodgekeeper 15 years or more, and my old dad afore that. And he's as fine a master as a man could want. And now, Miss Alice, she's the same. Oh, it made my blood boil to hear some of the things Mr. McCarthy said about them, the lady especially.
This is a curious brand of friendship. Mm.
Some people are too open-handed for their own good. They get taken advantage of.
What occasioned your fight with Mr. McCarthy?
Oh, it wasn't no fight, sir. Just words.
He made another one of his filthy remarks about Miss Alice. I forgot myself.
And on the day of his death, did you forget yourself then also?
What are you suggesting?
Nothing. Be so good as to show me your boots.
I tell you, I've already interviewed everyone at Hatherley Farm. This is a waste of time.
I've no desire to question anyone.
Then why the devil are we going there?
Before we go to the scene of the crime, it's imperative that I measure the McCarthy's boots.
Boots again? Look, Holmes, I find it hard enough to tattle facts without flying away after theories and fancies.
Yeah, you're right. You do find it very hard to tackle facts.
I've grasped one fact, which you seem to find it difficult to get hold of.
And that is?
That McCarthy Sr. met his death from McCarthy Jr. And that all theories to the contrary are the merest moonshine.
Well, moonshine is a brighter thing than fog.
Here is where the body lay. Here are three separate tracks of the same feet. Young McCarthy's feet. Twice walking, once running. Ah, what's this? Ah, the butt end of the gun rested here. And there, the strayed a mole could trace him. What are we here? Ah, square-capped boots, unusual boots. Left foot normal, right foot dragging. Yes. Ah, single thread of wool snagged on this bark. Splendid now.
Mr. Holmes.
Inspector.
Mr. Holmes. Charming.
You shouldn't have interrupted him.
Look at him. What does he think he's doing?
He's like a different man when he's at the scene of a crime. Mm. It's almost as if it's the only time he's really alive.
He's carrying on like a dog casting for a scent.
Yes, I think that's exactly it.
What's got into him now? Lost a bit of bounce, hasn't he, eh?
Well, Holmes. A singular affair. Most singular.
Oh, yes. You've found your proof, have you? Your scientific proof? Well, if you want me to arrest Arthur Moran, you're going to have to give me some real evidence.
Moran is not the killer.
Oh, really? Change your tune, have you?
On the contrary, I never thought he was. Hmm? This may interest you, Lestrade.
Look, Holmes, I'm a policeman, not a geologist. What's interesting about an old stone?
The fact that the murder was done with it.
Oh, this is too much. Yeah, I can't see any marks on it.
There are none. But it exactly corresponds with the injuries, and it had been hurriedly discarded. The grass was growing beneath it. It had only lain there for a few days.
And now I suppose you're going to tell me who the murderer is.
He is a tall man, limps with the right leg, wears thick-soled, square-capped shooting boots and a full-length cloak and smokes Indian cigars from a holder.
Holmes, I'm a practical man. I can't go about the country arresting every man with a gammy leg. I'd be the laughing stock of the yard.
All right. I've given you your chance. Goodbye. Holmes? Holmes?
Hmm?
Your coffee. Drink it before it gets cold.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
You know, don't you? You know who the murderer is.
Yes, I do.
Why is that knowledge bothering you so much?
Look, Watson, I don't know what to do, and I should value your advice.
Gladly.
We have a little time. Let me preach to you for a while. Have one of these cigars.
Thank you. Time before what?
You'll see. Well, now, there were several points about young McCarthy's story that struck us both at once, though they impressed me in his favour and you against him.
Everything he said was either inconsistent or just downright bizarre. Look at the father's dying words. It was hard not to believe that the lad was simply making everything up.
No, no, Watson. If you've just committed a murder and you've a mind to put a last message into your victim's mouth, you don't invent something fantastical. You have him accuse someone else. Well, I could list you half a dozen cases where exactly that was done.
You said yourself that the boy wasn't exactly quick-witted.
Yes, I did. I mean, that doesn't mean he's a second Lestrade.
Well, then, what about his father calling out to him, using a private signal, when he couldn't possibly have known that the lad was there? Isn't that suspicious?
Not when you know exactly what that signal was.
Why? What was it? I don't believe Lestrade mentioned it.
He didn't, because it meant nothing to him. But you would have realized its significance at once, I fancy.
I would?
I only know it because it's in the transcript of the inquest, and then I was damnably slow to see what it meant. There's one thing that permeates this whole case, one common factor, and the key to it was that signal, one word.
I'm sorry, Holmes, I'm not following this.
What does coo-ee mean to you, Watson?
Well, it's an old Australian bush cry. Aborigine, I think. Holmes.
Exactly. Behold the missing link.
Mr. Turner.
Not one word from you, Doctor. You are Sherlock Holmes.
I am.
I got your note.
Holmes, what's the meaning of this?
I assure you, Watson, I asked Mr. Turner to join us only if he felt fully able to do so.
Well, I'm here and I'm still breathing. What do you want?
First, let me provide you with a match for that excellent cigar which the doctor is eyeing so disapprovingly. Now, what about the other point in my note?
Alice doesn't know I'm here.
Very good. In a small community such as this, some facts are so well known that nobody ever mentions them. Until Watson here called on you last night, I had no idea of the source of your fortune.
Gold. Australian gold.
You were a miner. Isn't that right, Mr. Turner?
How much do you know?
I know that you are a generous man, noted for it, in fact, and I know that many philanthropists are privately trying to atone for something less admirable buried in their past.
Fancy theories.
Then here are some facts. I know that it was to meet you that Charles McCarthy went down to the Boscombe Pool on the day of his death. I know that it was to attract your attention that he called the single word coo-ee. And, of course, I know that you killed him.
Holmes!
So, you know everything.
No, not everything. How long had Charles McCarthy been blackmailing you?
So, that was it.
Yes, Doctor. That was it.
McCarthy's use of that particular signal made it clear that he had also spent time in Australia. Once I realized that, it was a simple deduction that your friendship with him dated from that long ago.
Friendship? He was the worst enemy a man ever had. When I went out to Australia, I was a young chap, hot-blooded and restless, full of hope. It was supposed to be the promised land. There were fortunes just waiting to be made. The truth of it was very different. I had no luck with my claim.
And you discovered, I fancy, that there are quicker and easier ways of obtaining gold than digging it out of the ground.
Much easier.
Whoa, there, boy! boys!
Throw down your guns!
Hold on!
Pete!
Yeah, boss!
Check inside the wagon!
Right, Jack!
Tim! Bruce! Unload the gold!
Did he call you Jack?
What if he did?
Nothing! Nothing! You're not Black Jack! You're never the Bellerin gang, are you?
Yeah! We were famous. And we were young and we were rich. It's a dangerous combination. Life was good. But then, one of our jobs went wrong. A guard was killed. It meant the rope if we were caught. It stopped being a game.
And McCarthy?
He was a wagon driver on the Melbourne Bullion Run. It was our last job. And our biggest. By then, I had enough gold to get me back to the old country and set me up in a respectable life. I bought this land and settled down, and married my Catherine. God rest her soul.
And then McCarthy appeared in England.
Oh, I used to laugh when people talked about fate turning against someone. But we met up by accident. Pure accident. I'd all but forgotten him. But he remembered me well enough.
And you've been in his power ever since?
20 years. He moved down here to the West Country. And he and his boy lived on my best land rent-free from that day on.
Adding to your reputation for generosity in the process.
All I wanted was to forget the past. But he wouldn't let me forget.
He threatened to tell the police?
The police? No, Doctor. He was cleverer than that. He threatened to tell my Alice.
What did he demand? Money?
And land. Property. What could I do? Then, a few years ago, when his boy was grown, he asked for my daughter.
And through her, total control of your whole fortune once you'd gone.
I stood firm. I even told him to do his worst and tell Alice everything. But he was a cunning devil. He tried to wear me down. For 3 years, he talked of nothing else. And finally, I told him we had to settle it once and for all.
You arranged the meeting by the pool.
I was going to buy him off for good. Set him up anywhere in the world. But when I got there, I found out he wasn't alone.
Why won't you listen to me? I'm telling you it's impossible. I can't marry her.
I don't know how I got such a spineless brat as you.
I'll not listen to any more of this.
If you can't persuade the girl, then force her. I don't care if she marries you because she wants you or she has to. It's all the same to me. You...
Father! Oh, my God.
I did it with no more compunction than if he'd been some poisonous beast. I did it, and I'd do it again. I just had time to get back undercover, but I dropped my cloak.
Your grey cloak. I found some threads at the murder scene.
I saw the lad's head turn as I pulled it behind the tree where I was hidden. I think he caught a glimpse of it.
A shapeless grey object moving low over the ground.
He didn't see me. He was too busy slobbering over his worthless father.
Who was desperately trying to identify his killer, Black Jack of Ballarat.
Yeah. Well, I give you my word that I wouldn't have let the boy come to any harm. If it had gone against him at the assizes, I would have spoken out.
I'm glad to hear you say so.
I would have made a clean breast of it already if it weren't for my Alice. It'll break her heart when she hears that I've been arrested.
You haven't yet. And it may not come to that.
What are you saying?
Explain yourself, sir. Don't play games with me.
Lestrade has gone back to London. He regards the case as over and done with. And I am no official agent. I am concerned only to act in the best interests of my client, your daughter.
So, Alice sent for you.
To clear James McCarthy, I believe I can do so without naming the true killer, but there is a possibility that I may fail. I shall write up your story and you shall sign it. I promise that I'll not produce it unless it proves absolutely necessary.
Holmes, this is extremely irregular.
How can I ever repay you? Name any sum.
Keep your money.
I'll sign whatever you send to me. If you should ever find yourself in the same position, a chance to rid the world of such a man and rescue everything you hold true and dear,